When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? We sure have. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, streaming now.
Hello, welcome to Emotional Badass, where Moxie meets Mindful. I'm your host, Nikki Eisenhower, life coach and psychotherapist. And today I want to discuss the importance of letting go and release. Hello, y'all. Release and letting go are concepts we probably know something about, right? These are words and terms we've learned and used and utilized all of our lives. But do we really understand release and letting go? This life invites us to let go and release often, every day, multiple times a day. Lots can be frustrating or disappointing, difficult. I catch myself needing to let go continuously throughout my days and then collectively through my life. When I do so, I'm creating space inside of my mind, space in my body, space in my life to invite new things, different things, expansive things. The advice to let go, just release, or every sensitive person's favorite, relax. This type of advice can really be enraging or deeply sad for a childhood trauma survivor. Why? Because we'd love to relax. We'd love to let go. We'd love to feel more at ease. We just haven't had a life where we've seen people practice these healthy coping strategies in front of us, or if we have, not with a frequency that helps us learn these concepts. I didn't have coping strategies for letting go modeled for me growing up. If anything, in the parenting I had a lot of holding on. I watched my biological parents have a 7-year-long divorce when, y'all, there weren't any assets to fight over or to struggle over. They held on to the fight. I wish I didn't learn that. I wish I had learned other things, but part of healing and part of taking care of myself is honestly looking at what did I learn and what do I want to learn now to take better care of myself than maybe I was ever taking care of as a child. I hope this episode shines light and understanding on what it is we're actually doing when we successfully let go and release. It's an easy thing to sound like a throwaway, like some kind of cheap psychobabble or pop psychology. I hope this episode helps you find a permission to be a strategist in your life towards your greatest good. And that part of your strategy is learning how to let go with more ease and more flow. If you've been hanging out with me for a long time on Emotional Badass, and you probably know that Melody Beattie's The Language of Letting Go Journal is hands down my favorite self-help book. It's the book I touch the most. It's the book that I reference the most, sometimes every day, sometimes multiple times a day, especially if I'm going through something that's hard or tough or that I feel myself gripping and hanging on to. I often reference this book in our monthly live stream Q&As on Patreon. The next two topics happen to be how to stop catastrophizing. In June, we're going to cover overcoming guilt and regret. Can you hear how important the skills of letting go are to our lives? The guilt and regret that we face feeling, learning from, and letting go again and again and again, the grief that we will feel, especially as people who care deeply. We may need more letting go skills and strategies than the average person who might not so easily grip or hang on out of a sense of care, out of a sense of loyalty. Melody Beatty is the guru of codependency recovery. She coined the term. I think of her as the high priestess, if you will, of growing beyond codependency, growing beyond people pleasing, letting go of martyrdom. She is genius at simply and powerfully modeling what it takes to grow beyond this accidental symptom. And I do believe it is a symptom. We don't just come into the world naturally holding on to way too much to our detriment. This is a symptom. If you're into this week's topic, I highly recommend all of Melody Beatty's work. So why work on yourself if you lean people-pleasing or codependent? Why even bother learning how to let go if we're constantly picking things up? It can feel like the dilemma of, why do I make my bed every day when I'm just going to get into it at night? Well, it changes how it feels to get into that bed each night. Changes how it feels to walk into that room. It feels calming. Feels peaceful. It feels respectful to our things and to ourselves when we make that bed. It's a way that we take care of ourselves, even though it's little, even though it can definitely be argued as inconsequential, not a big deal. My reason to work on letting go is because I've seen far too many people get to the end of their lives with these dynamics. And more often than not, when these dynamics are present, holding on to resentment, holding on to the past, holding on to anger, holding on to victim mentality, when people get to the end of their lives through these dynamics, they don't seem very happy. They're certainly not very satisfied. They can be resentful, bitter, sometimes more hurt and sad, sometimes more angry in their martyrdom. And all of these vibes are the vibes that push other people away. Many people with these dynamics will report loneliness, regret, and dissatisfaction at the end. There's no getting around it. It's awful to see someone at the end bitter, kind of miserable when they could have learned to live differently and they didn't. If you have such examples in your life, I'll offer you a mindset strategy here. To look at people who get to the ends of their lives and aren't very happy and satisfied, who have self-martyred, who have held on to so much that has not served them. Look at them. Whether they're still with you or whether they're long gone, look at them. Take a moment to see them. You can see their struggle. You can see their age, but I bet you can also see the wounded inner child in them that has gone unhealed, unattended to, unacknowledged, unheard. The reframe when we see such things that are unfortunate is to use that pain that we see to commit within ourselves to learning what that person in pain in front of us either didn't choose to learn or didn't get the chance to learn in their one precious life. When I do so, when I learn from their pain, when I grow into more wisdom for my life because they were in pain, I'm honoring that pain by committing to not recreating that same pain in my life. That is what wisdom is. Taking pain, making it wise. Squeezing what is actually useful out of that pain and taking it with us instead of holding on to what makes us miserable or unsatisfied or unfulfilled or bitter. One of my struggles as a mental health clinician, and it has been since I started graduate school, trying to see how I fit into the profession of mental health, how I'm different and what I might bring and add to this profession. it's boggled me in realizing that I am very much drawn to prevention of future struggle in myself as a human being in my private life, but as a clinician in mental health, and then now as a life coach. But science can't study what we prevent, what isn't there, what doesn't come to fruition. It's much harder to study what we prevent. But it's an important part to true and full healing. If we are truly healed, then we get out of patterns. There is something in trauma work called trauma repetition. Y'all have heard me talk about it, longtime listeners of the show, all kinds of different ways. It is unfortunate in the human condition that we are such habitual creatures, such creatures of pattern and habit, that when we grow up in chaos, when we grow up in dysfunction, when we grow up with immature parenting, what happens is we're drawn to what we know. That's unfortunate for those of us raised in a lot of dysfunction, that we wouldn't naturally be drawn to what would be better for us, what would be healing, that we are, as patterned creatures, drawn more to what we know unless we bring in a lot of intentional healing, a lot of intentional redirection, reframing, guidance of ourselves towards a life that is very unknown when we come from dysfunction and chaos. This show is a great example in my own life of me guiding myself towards my purpose, guiding myself away from chaos towards what is useful, trying to make purpose, healing, forward motion, growth out of my pain. This is what we're called to do in the human condition. Pain is our greatest teacher if we let it, or our pain can become our greatest sticking point. True and full healing involves taking empowered action now to set ourselves up for the kind of emotional, physical, spiritual, and yes, even financial success that we want, that we deserve, that breaks generational trauma, that lifts us up, not smooshes us down, and brings us forward, not sets us back. We can't measure what we prevent. And yet we absolutely, by intentional choice, we prevent a lot of future struggle when we understand how to learn and grow from our pain and what and how to let go of. If you could prevent future dissatisfaction, prevent future depression in the ways that you can control, if you could prevent future disappointment in yourself, by learning to strategize and prioritize what really counts, what really matters, your well-being, would you? Now, that might seem like a no-duh obvious question, but it's not. I look out at the world and I see and know many people who resist thinking about prevention, who resist strategizing their lives. Not everyone wants to live with an eye to prevention. Not everyone wants to live through the experience of learning how to let go of what no longer or never did serve. And I'm asking you today in this moment, is this a priority for you? Are you interested in cultivating true peace and healing in your life? Not just wanting it, not just desiring it, not just hoping it will fall out of the sky. Are you willing to get out of your comfort zone and do the work of changing? What would happen if I had the magic right now in this moment to snap my fingers and every single person who is listening to my voice, me included, if all of a sudden we could no longer urinate, we could no longer cry, we could no longer poop, we could no longer cough, we could no longer spit, we could no longer blow our noses. Imagine if the physical ways that we all release, imagine if we could no longer do any of those things. How would we feel in an hour? How would we feel in 24 hours? How would we feel at the end of the week? The end of a month? The end of a year? I would be beyond miserable. I would be crawling out of my skin to release. If we don't learn that emotional release, mental release, are just as important and valuable as physical release, then we might accidentally carry so much weight, so much burdensome heaviness, that it really can feel like we're carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders. This is part of the history of my jaw surgeries that became botched and I had lots of struggle with. I wound up having three because I carried the weight of the world for my family, for my siblings, for myself, for life, for people I saw struggling on TV, for those Save the Children commercials I grew up with and saw hungry children. I carried the weight of the world. I had no idea how to not carry that weight. To this day, I still do a lot to manage the pain in my jaw. I held a secret growing up, very detrimental secret, and my body locked down around it. I carry pain and stress in my shoulders as if I'm carrying the weight of the world. It's a very old pattern, and because I've had surgeries that also interplay with that patterning, I do a lot to take care of myself and to not pick up any extra weight unnecessarily to add to my load. Carrying a bunch of emotional and mental weight, it really is enough to depress, to preoccupy us so much that we are continuously robbed of the present moment without even knowing it. This weightiness, this holding on to so many things, it clouds our thinking. It disrupts our sleep. And it makes us crave soothing because we're not putting down the weight. We're just carrying it around. So we need some soothing for that. We need some pain relief, some stress reliever. So what do humans do? We lean into our favorite vices. And those favorite vices, they feel great while we're using them. Alcohol, food, spending, sex, porn. But a lot of those vices, they bring a hefty dose of self-sabotage. It's basically not cool if we keep reaching for coping strategies that ultimately, at the end of the day, self-sabotage. The things we're doing to relieve stress shouldn't then bring more stress. We can do so much better than these funky accidental self-sabotaging cycles.
At a time when change is constant and we are pulled in far too many directions, we need a way to stay present to life and to increase our ability to remain calm, think clearly, and maintain our well-being. Many studies indicate mindfulness improves our mental, emotional, and physical health. On A Mindful Moment with Teresa McKee, you can learn how to practice mindfulness and enjoy its many benefits. Tune in for guided meditations and to hear tips and advice from some of the most respected experts in the fields of mental health and mindfulness. The world truly can be a better place. It all starts with a mindful moment.
Healing is about fulfilling a self-honoring that's offered when we're born. If you can't honor yourself in this life, have goals that excite you, that inspire you, that you get to move towards and fulfill and see yourself in that fulfillment, what are we even doing? If you self-sabotage in any way, I promise you there are better ways. Even if you think you've tried everything under the sun, you haven't. You've just tried everything that you've been able to think of. It's why I work with professionals sometimes to help inspire me, to help give me ideas, to help me see what I might not be able to see in the moment. And every time I get that kind of help, I add to how I can see moving forward. It's not about creating a dependency and running to someone every time something in life comes up. It's about me adding to my tool belt and allowing myself to have help, especially from fine emotional craftsmen out there. The same if I was trying to build a chair or a bench or a table, I'd want to learn from a great craftsman, a woodworker, a carpenter. So how do we know if we're holding on to emotional things? Here are some questions to ask yourself. And if one stirs you or really grabs your attention or hits you in your core, sparks something, then I ask you to consider, if this is your intuition, asking you to go further. Maybe take the questions to a journal or a meditation session. All right, here we go. Do you find yourself rehashing the past or ruminating a lot? See, a lot of us don't know the difference between healthy process towards release and ruminating, which is like circling and circling and circling and circling, and we're not going anywhere. Do you ruminate on things that you have little to no control over? Like politics, the state of the world, decisions your boss makes that you don't like, even things like uncooperative weather or choices that you yourself made when you were younger that just cannot be undone. Rehashing this form of overthinking, it takes a human being out of the present moment of their lives. If you're having a little victim mentality, you might get a little irritated when you hear me say this. I encourage you to do what you think you need to do with your victim mentality if I'm poking it right now. Because the truth is, the present moment is very often painless today. How can I say that? When you're out there listening and I don't know your story, I don't know what you're going through, well, you're listening to a podcast. It is likely that almost all of you listening are clothed and fed and hydrated with a roof over your head. And that means that this present moment is A-okay. We're all right. We're good. We're solid. If your head keeps taking you back to an issue or back to a painful past, circling and circling again and again and again and again, it might mean that your system doesn't know what to do with peace in the present moment. You might very well be uncomfortable and resistant to peace, to ease, to things being okay. You may have been patterned into pain, patterned into struggle, patterned into upset, patterned into stress. What would happen in your life if you were able to extrapolate some hard-earned wisdom from that pain, honor the pain, learn what you need to learn, and then be done with that past pain? It's true, there might always be a little bit of something to learn. Our past can come up in moments and not be dysfunctional at all. It's not about sealing some kind of vault and never looking at your past again. It's about being able to be finished with the pain. Letting the pain process out and finish instead of stoking the flame of that pain fire again and again and again, as if it's doing something for you to keep that pain going. What would happen in your life if you released the pattern of familiarity around pain and learned to bask in the present moment until the present moment and peace becomes your new pattern? Rehashing, anxiety, and overthinking, they're not your personality. There's so much out there online, even professionals with similar credentials to what I hold, who are basically pushing that anxiety is a cute personality trait. No, it's not. Rehashing, anxiety, overthinking, these are not your personality. They're learned stress responses. The beauty of being creatures that learn is that when we accidentally learn something that isn't useful, that is exhausting, we really can learn differently. Our power is in vulnerably choosing to learn beyond what we know now. It's why people with ego problems don't do such work, don't like my show, don't want to listen to the anti-victim mentality principles that I teach. You have so much power to choose. And you get to learn that there are more choices in this life than you might be able to see, feel, or reach for in this moment. If that's where you are, I ask you and invite you to open up to the possibility that there just are more choices than you can see right now. What if that's true? Will you allow yourself that possibility? How much energy would you have if you halved the time you spent in your head in the past? It's so easy to think about healing in very black and white terms without realizing it. Oh no, I could never do that. I've always been an overthinker. All right, I hear you. I get it for sure. Some of us have the natural propensity completely unrelated to anything traumatic or dysfunctional, to think more or to think less. But if it's wearing you out, you can do better than that. How much energy would you have if you halved the time you spent in your head? What if you could reduce it by 75%? It's been life-changing for me. That space. And it feels like a spaciousness in my mind and body. To know that my system has been trained into being able to say to myself, hey, that's not useful. Don't think about that anymore. And I can redirect my energy in a different direction. And my mind actually listens. That's a healthy power. That's healing. That's taking my life back from the dysfunction I grew up with. And my inner child is watching me at all times. And when I do so, she looks up at me and feels protected and taken care of in ways that she wasn't by the family system she was born into. That is the essence of healing, y'all. I want to ask this question here because it's a real sneaky place where we can hold on to a stressor. And I think it's one that we can all empathize with. If we haven't had this experience, I am pretty confident that we have witnessed people having this experience I'm about to name. Do you, after experiencing the death of someone special to you, do you hold on to grief afterwards because it seems like the only thing that's left? That the connection to your person or to your pet that you lost, because they're now gone, because they have died, that grief seems like the greatest connection that we have left. Do you hold on to grief to hold on to the person or to your pet? Does some part of you believe that it's right to experience misery and that that misery proves how much you cared, how much you loved? Does some part of you believe that it would be wrong after losing someone that you love and care about, that it would be wrong to experience thriving? That it would be wrong to experience joy or satisfaction or fun because they no longer can? I gave you a mindset strategy earlier. There is no pet or no loving person that leaves this life and wants you in pain. I cannot believe that the spirit of a human being after they've passed, and it's my belief, it doesn't have to be yours, that after we pass, we get an enlightenment. None of our human hang-ups cross over. That there is a peace, and yes, I choose to believe that with no proof. You decide what you want for you there. I will choose to believe, and it is a choice, that when I lose people, when they are gone from me, I will thrive more. I will have more joy. I will have more satisfaction. I will have more fun. I will have more light for me and for them because they're no longer here. Another question for you about holding on to what doesn't really serve you. Do you often pick up the worst case scenario lens to gaze at your life options through? If you feel overwhelmed a lot, if you procrastinate a lot, this is likely why and how you accidentally create that feeling state, that stress. Many of us learned that grown-ups act after they're stressed. They don't act motivated to their greater good. They act after they're stressed to try to reduce stress. This is what we're doing when we bring in worst case scenario. We're going, aha, the solution is maximally stressing myself out. Doesn't make much sense when I put it that way, right? These are accidental dysfunctional patterns we pick up. We can either live our lives with them or we can wring them out like we're a sponge. We're spongy as highly sensitive people. And then we can soak up what actually serves us by making that space when we wring out that sponge. Our inner psychology procrastinates when we worst case scenario because it's as if our inner psyche experiences this message like this. Oh, it's all the end of the world, huh? You're crafting a message to me that it is apocalyptic. I'm an inner adolescent. I'm going to roll my eyes at you. I don't want to get started on anything. If it's all doom and gloom, why should I do anything? I don't even want to get started. Do you know how to let go of the worst case scenario lens? Because it's like putting a 100-pound weight in a backpack and forging ahead in your life, never taking it off, just because the worst case scenario could possibly happen. Well, if the worst case scenario is possible, guess what? So is the best case scenario. I don't think it's always a problem that we pick up worst case scenario. The problem is that there is some force around this worst case scenario idea in the human condition. That once we start picking that sucker up, it's as if it's the only damn lens we pick up. It's a hog of a lens for our life. And our critical voice, our human ego, loves the worst case scenario. The problem is that we don't equally, at a minimum, pick up the best case scenario and go out on the hikes of our lives, go out to explore with the best case scenario, the best case lens. And that sucker is not only weightless, it takes weight off of us, where worst case scenario immediately adds 100 pounds. How much lighter would you feel if worst case scenario wasn't the lens you primarily carried around with you everywhere? What would happen if you called forth your wise man or your wise woman part, and he or she gets to decide with a loving, firm care and discipline that no, we are not going to listen to the most critical voice inside of ourselves. It doesn't get to chime in on every single thought that we're having, every potential. Because that critical voice, ooh, it really believes that it is so genius to just keep bringing up the worst case scenario. But that worst case scenario part, y'all, it is so extremely limited. It doesn't compute the exhaustion level, the burnout, the cynicism, the low vibes that it invites into your system. How much energy would you have if you had more ease letting go and living in this present moment? See, I can't decide for you that you are worthy of peace, of groundedness, of letting go, of feeling lighter. And it's not contingent on external circumstances. It is very easy for us to get bogged down in external circumstance. And no doubt, external circumstance, certain seasons of our lives can be very, very heavy and very challenging. Our power is in cultivating our mindset, our letting go muscles. Next month's live stream, How to Stop Catastrophizing Hardship, and June's Overcoming Guilt and Regret. If you're interested in these concepts, come hang out at our Patreon. While you're there, grab your half price coupon to join Emotional Strength Training 30 Days to Peace. It starts on the 1st. It'll be there in a blink. I want you to know that releasing and letting go do not mean that anyone who has ever hurt you, harmed you, or betrayed you is off the hook. That had me hooked for so long. I didn't want to let go of my anger at my mother, my anger at the legal system and how it treated me through pressing charges against my dad. It felt like I was letting them all off the hook if I let go and healed myself. What I was doing was prolonging my pain. Me holding on didn't do anything to anybody else, didn't make anybody else learn any lessons, didn't make anything good happen. Letting go let me off the hook, not them. Releasing and letting go do not mean that you never did or you no longer care. It means you care so much that you are upping your behavioral self-respect by refusing to be miserable, down, or depressed a moment longer in this life. Releasing and letting go do mean that you are maturing that sweet inner child, that you are growing wiser through the Buddhist teaching of non-attachment. Letting go and releasing means that you're learning how to prioritize and value the limited time we have in this one precious life. And it means you're becoming unwilling to unnecessarily experience more suck than is absolutely necessary. Letting go and releasing means that you are self-respecting and intentionally selecting how much emotional weight your body and mind will carry. Letting go means that you are willing and desiring of practicing more flow in your life. Can't flow very well with 100 pounds of weight strapped to your being. Letting go means that you're actually dealing with reality instead of some kind of inner child utopian perfectionistic ideal of how things should be. When we deal with reality, we deal with real things like the inevitability of life and death. We deal with the inevitability and truth that nothing stays the same and the only constant is change. When we let go, we are dealing with the reality that we want to embrace what will actually serve us. And we can't do that if we're gripping what doesn't. You have found your way all the way to this show. There are millions of podcasts. I can't even imagine how many episodes. And you have found your way to Emotional Badass, to me and my voice right now in this moment. You are a seeker, no doubt. You are on a path where you learn how to take care of your inner child with a loving, firm discipline. I know that's a charged word, but it's the truth. That says no to holding on to what no longer serves or never did, and yes towards guiding you to thrive. You deserve thriving just like every single precious new baby that's born does. You were once that baby. Honor him, honor her. If you want to work out these muscles with me in the unique way that I teach, I know nothing else like emotional strength training, 30 days to peace, you are invited. Use code BADASS to save 30%. Don't overthink it. Just jump in. Only 7 to 15 minutes a day. And you can start at 4 a.m. if that's when you wake up. You can start after breakfast. You can start once you get to work. Whatever works for your life. Here are comments from the last cohort that went through the course. Timing is a big one. I can do things more freely without that feeling of urgency. That urgency was never mine, but placed within me a very long time ago. I see it now. I knew it wasn't me. Can you hear and feel the release in that, the letting go? Here's another. Whoa. In the final position, the top floor in my mind opened up like walking into an attic of magic. I felt a little like a Conan, LOL, good exercise. It's important to me that people have fun while they're healing. Some of the exercises I offer are fun. They're enjoyable. They're light. How else do we learn to be light and enjoy this life? All of our healing does not need to be the crying and dying, y'all. Here's another. This is such a simple one that I can use anywhere, anytime. Grab something and take 5 minutes and focus and breathe and clear out the busy from mind and tension from my body. Here's another. This was very helpful in finding the lesson in past regrets and leaving the regret in the past and bringing only the wisdom forward. I will be using this exercise as needed to handle regret in a more positive way. I am looking forward to losing some of the emotional baggage tied to past regrets and keeping only the lesson. Thank you for this tool. Light and love, y'all. May we all let go and find lightness. Emotional Badass is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. I am an emotional badass. You are an emotional badass. And together, we are where moxie meets mindful. Light and love. And I will see you right here next time for a brand new episode. And I'll see some of you in Patreon for commercial, free, and exclusive episodes where you can get nowhere else. Light and love. And I'll see you right here. Bye-bye.
You find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night.